I wanted to start by asking whether or not you think of yourself as a long shot candidate, just since a Democrat hasn't been elected statewide since 1994, and you're going up an incumbent with, you know, a formidable war chest and that, you know, is pretty high in popularity ratings.
Yes.
Yes. And is
yes.
that... is that daunting for you at all? How do you kind of get up in the morning and campaign on that?
It's not daunting. It's a little bit exhilarating, really. And I'm doing the very best I can and have been single-mindedly working on it for a very long time. So now, with only a few months left, I'm able to focus on what I've learned over the years I need to do to not only do my best, but to win.
And
by the way, the one thing I might disagree with is your comment on his popularity numbers. His support is not quite as deep as I would think that the word popular would admit.
Okay. Well, where are the areas
he is,
that
he's
you
got
think
all the
can
other,
support?
He, sorry.
Where are the, what are the areas where you think he's lacking support? That I mean, we can get into that if you want.
Sure. I think that he has stumbled in several areas, which have caused the general likely voters to begin to doubt his capabilities. The issues we've started raising about child support, for example, have hit a very deep trove of people who, by virtue of experience, know that child support is administered poorly in this state. And I think now that there's been some publicity of his very quiet filing and committing Texas to defend Arizona in the immigration lawsuit using our resources, I think that issue, now that it's been publicized, and if it were not for the media, we wouldn't know. He's been very quiet about it. Last I saw, had not even issued a press release on it. But the nature of his intervention in the Arizona dispute is, I think, going to erode what you characterize as popularity, and I would say is he's been there a long time. And with the length of time he's been there, there comes some recognition, but he's not as well known as I think he'd like to be.
Let's talk a little bit about the legal brief that he filed supporting the Arizona law. And he's also he's suing the federal government over EPA regulations, over health care, and the oil drilling moratorium. And maybe you can list other instances where he's gone up against the federal government. When do you think it's appropriate for a state's AG to challenge the federal government? And do you think that that it was appropriate in these instances?
Well, in the Arizona case, let's start with that first example.
Okay.
It's a complete wrong-headed move. It's a waste of our taxpayer resources. It's a waste of his time, and it's done for political show. The legal position he takes is the most tortured. Once you read the brief, what strikes you is that, at least it struck me, that he's trying to prove that he's not regulating immigration. That is, that the Arizona law is not regulating immigration. He's got to prove that. And so the entire brief is a tortured effort to twist what's happening in Arizona to make it exempt from any kind of federal government issue. Now, it's not really a surprise in terms of his political attitude. He's been going on the politics of fear and hate on immigration for a long time. I don't know if you recall back in, it was either late 07 or early 08, that the Attorney General, Mr. Abbott, was forced to withdraw an opinion. He'd said that non-citizens who served in the military didn't qualify for veterans' college tuition programs. Well, there was an outcry a legitimate outcry that that was completely unfair, unconstitutional,
and
the AG just had it wrong.
What does it mean when an AG is forced to withdraw an opinion?
Well, it was public pressure that forced him to withdraw it. He got it wrong. The AG has a massive power in his opinions, and his opinion had caused, by force of the legal effect and the pragmatic effect of an AG opinion, had caused a group of people who are our veterans who served honorably not to get their qualifying veterans college tuition. And so having withdrawn it, they got it. But let me give you another example of the effect of an AG opinion and when it's not withdrawn. The AG wrote, Mr. Abbott wrote the opinion that enabled the margin tax to go into effect. Carol Keaton, when she was comptroller, wrote an opinion requesting he withdraw it because he was wrong on the law. The margin tax violated the Bullock Amendment to the Constitution requiring the people vote on an income tax. Mr. Abbott refused to withdraw it in that case, and instead, later on, I believe it was during Susan Coombs' tenure after Carol Keaton, had the comptroller's opinion withdrawn. So the AG trumped the comptroller. So it's a massively powerful office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one example. AG opinions are issued on a wide variety of areas.
Right.
It's a huge power. And it's interesting you should ask. I rarely get asked that question during an interview. Rarely do we go into that kind of depth.
Yeah.
It's a massive
power. Well, so when... kind of getting back to our original topic, when do you think it is appropriate for the AG to use the power of his office to go up against the federal government?
Well, one of the basic powers of the AG that has been recognized for over 100 years in the Supreme Court of the United States is what's called quasi-sovereign interest. That is, the state has, and the AG has, a responsibility to protect the economic and physical well-being of the people of Texas and Texas itself and our economy. So the AG, if he's going to file, or she, if and when we elect our first woman AG, but if an AG is going to file a lawsuit, you've got to do it knowing that you'll have standing, that is, it'll be recognized that you're allowed to proceed with the suit. These show lawsuits, which can't be settled, don't involve proof that the AG can make on economic harm or on the magnitude of the harm that's required by the law. And there's some excellent cases that give guidance on when the AG can file a suit. And so the AG has tried to file these kinds of suits as well. Now, the Arizona suit is none such thing. The AG has sent one letter, December 2009, and filed two lawsuits involving EPA and pollution. Now, the first of those was a climate change lawsuit, and the second, and that was a show lawsuit to say, just to kind of attack and get into the ClimateGate scandal of whether the emails said what they meant. It was also used part of his press release language, claiming to have done a good job in the ASARCO settlement, when the opposite is true. But the second EPA lawsuits on, which was very recently on emissions and flexible permits, even though he didn't cite the correct basis, made an economic argument much more specifically than he did in the climate change lawsuit. So on making the economic argument, you're allowed to say you're hurting Texas. The problem is he can't prove it, and he wasn't able to marshal the proof. So that lawsuit, too, will ultimately fail. It's a shame. It's a waste of money. The economic argument that could be made that he's had for years is on our federal highway tax dollars and how they're treated for the rest of the government. It's really a very specific problem of proof he's got. And we could talk about, for example, his health care attack on the federal government. How about his moratorium attack on the federal government? There he is suing the federal government. He marshals all the evidence about the harm that BP caused us. Keep in mind, he's talking in his complaint. He's talking about BP action. He has marshaled the evidence of $622 million. It's over $600 million of damage he can prove. He makes the legal argument that there's been a physical touching of our shores, scientifically proven to be BP oil from the disaster. And then instead of going after BP, who he accused of not planning properly, thereby allowing the federal government to do what they said they did because of BP, that is, issue a moratorium, and he never, still hasn't sued BP, which is a straight shot. Instead, he files a show lawsuit against the federal government that can't be settled, that will never bring a dollar back to Texas, doesn't even ask.
So if you were AG, if you were in General Abbott's position, would you have sued BP by now?
Oh, yes. And keep in mind, you already have two states. Look what Bobby Jindal did in Louisiana. He's already hired Barron and Budd to sue BP.
And the Alabama Attorney General, I think, has also filed.
I'm not sure. I don't know if they filed the lawsuit yet, but I think
okay.
You're right. I know that they both are not contemplating. They both have already announced they're going to do it. And the economic loss that Texas has already suffered as a result of the moratorium and the uncertainty in the Gulf can be directly attributed to the BP disaster. We have White House quotes on it. We have Mr. Abbott saying it in terms of BP's misconduct, which he came late to the game on this one. He called it initially, took a visit out with BP, and he said he'd be satisfied, you know, with, I forget his exact language, but he said he'd be satisfied with having the cost of his visit to BP compensated. But he's come around, albeit late. But he's only come around to recognize that Texas has been seriously damaged by the moratorium. But instead of suing BP for the damage that they've caused, he's not. And it's crazy to go after the people who cannot give you the economic recovery they're entitled to. We're talking about getting our money back. And the same is true on the Great Recession caused by Wall Street fraud. And I know you and I have talked about it before, but the straight shot there is to sue the fraudsters on Wall Street instead of just wringing your hands and saying, how are we going to get our money back?
You mentioned
AGs aren't supposed to just chat and wring their hands and not supposed to file show lawsuits.
You mentioned earlier that we haven't yet had a woman AG, and so if you win, you would be the state's first woman AG. Do you think it's significant that we haven't yet had a woman in that office yet, or is it just a matter of circumstance? And do you think it's important?
I do think it's important. I do think it's significant. I think a woman's perspective could be very helpful in the office. I think folks would trust a woman with good experience as a lawyer to get down to work and stop these posturing, boasting, shows, and really politicization of the office is outrageous. And reform of Child Support Administration would be an excellent example, as would the budget shortfall, which the AG can address, has the power to do so. In child support, we've got over $9 billion in delinquencies right now, with the budget being spent on it.
And in what way would a woman's perspective be helpful in those issues or in the office?
Well, I think the trust in a woman who, again, has the experience, and I think you've got to look at experience, and I've got 30 years as a lawyer, and have been recognized. You know, my website, the BarbaraAnn2010.com website's got a lot of information on my biography. Mm-hmm. But the perspective on child support alone, women and children are, for the most part, the custodial parent part of that equation. It's not always the case. It's not always the case. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, women and children are involved. And as I said, the delinquencies in Texas are massive. $9 billion on the books is delinquent. And that does not include what our research has shown and discussions with some very experienced practitioners, including a former AG in the Child Support Division, who have told us there are billions of dollars in mistakes off the books. And here's the irony, because I want to be fair to both custodial parents and non-custodial parents. And the great irony is what the AG is doing right now and has since he came to office is trying to spend as little money as possible on child support enforcement, but make it look better than it is. So when he came to office, he didn't fix the computers, which needed to reflect a law change. And instead of, it's just a very straightforward problem, and that the computers don't make the calculations correctly for the interest change that occurred on January 1st, 2002. And once he got into office, his job was to correct those computers when the law passed. And he even litigated a case on whether what the interest rate should be. So he can't debate whether or not he knows that the interest rate should have been 6% on all the old money that was delinquent before 2002. But he didn't change the computers to take it into account. And when you take that money over years and years and years, that women and children, and again, I shouldn't say women and children, I should say custodial parents and children. They've been cheated out of billions of dollars. At the same time, he uses his office to make non-custodial parents who are paying voluntarily or having their garnishment of wages, that's where he gets most of his money. And the sad fact is that there are repeated instances of miscalculations where the non-custodial parent, usually the dad, is not aware that they're being overcharged, because it's easy to get away with it when you don't have a good system of accounting. And so you find billions of women, sorry, I shouldn't put it that way, billions of dollars that are owed to custodial parents and their children that aren't being collected. They have $9 billion on the books and a lot of money off the books. And then we also have non-custodial parents, the ones who are paying or trying to pay. They're becoming the victim of, hey, let's just make them pay more.
And kind of changing tracks a little bit, but if you were elected and say Rick Perry was reelected, do you feel like you could work with a Republican governor or with other Republican statewide officials who might be elected?
Sure, no problem. The reason it's really no problem at all is it doesn't matter if the governor's Republican or Democrat. The attorney general works for the people of Texas, or that's the way it's supposed to work. He's not supposed to be Rick Perry's consigliere. It's just worked out that way.
And then speaking of debates, on Thursday, yesterday, we had a TrivLive event with Attorney General Greg Abbott, and he, our editor-in-chief, asked Abbott whether or not he would debate you, and he said that that was up to his campaign staff to decide. Are you willing to debate him? Do you think it's important to have a debate?
Yes, and yes. And let me take the opportunity to renew my call for a debate. As you may know, I told the League of Women Voters I'd debate him anywhere, anytime. And I did show up to the Kerrville League of Women Voters debate, but he was a no-show. But it was a good substantive debate. But as you might expect, I did excellent work without the Attorney General there. I do believe I do excellent work with him there. It's a shame. And I appreciate y'all raising the issue. It's been lost. My calls for a debate with Mr. Abbott have been lost in the huge issue over Governor Perry's refusal to debate Bill White.
And why do you think it's important to have a debate?
So the voters can actually see what they're getting, and it links us intimately with the very purpose of the Founding Fathers. It is the most democratic and Republican of things to do.
Let's see, I think that I have kind of gone over everything, but, well, maybe the last question would be maybe what will you do if you're not elected? What have you started to look beyond November? Are you committed to staying in politics? What's there?
Well, I've made no plans for the future other than reforming the AG's office, which really needs reform. And win or lose, I've got plans to enjoy two of my children getting married in the next several months.
Oh, wow.
But I will say that my long-term plan is to see that there's reform in the AG's office, not just on child support, but on the politicization of it.
Will you continue to try and work for reform even if you are not the one in the office?
As I say, I've not made any plans for what I will do other than being elected AG. But I would never give up on the issues that are hurting Texas. And the mess that's child support that allows the AG to manipulate the statistics and not spend money that he gets from the federal government, by the way, that's supposed to be going to try to collect these delinquencies and to clean up the system so non-custodial parents also treated badly. I don't want to give up on that. And the best way for me to affect a change would be as AG. And if the Tribune does host these events, like the one you were talking about Thursday, please know that if you invite General Abbott and me, I would show up.
Okay.
Now, I know he does.
Yeah.
He probably did work on he did good work unopposed. But, and when I say that, you know, he can stand up in front of a crowd and, you know, say things. But I'm not saying that it's to be able to stand up and talk is not the same as being able to, you know, have a debate. So.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you think is important to say?
Well, I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to debate. If I had to bottom line it, I think that the fear of debate is a sad thing, and the need for debate, I think, will show that I'm willing to fight for Texas and he's not.